Reporter Lee Thomas was used to telling stories. Maybe just not his own, but he decided to go ahead and reveal something very personal to his viewers, and soon to the world. The African-American TV reporter told his viewers, "Yes, I am turning white before your eyes." Thomas suffers from the skin disease vitiligo, which causes pigment cells to die, leaving the skin devoid of color. Now, in the U.S. alone, 2 million people suffer from vitiligo, and it was largely absent from public consciousness until Michael Jackson announced that he suffered from the skin disorder. Now, Lee has written a book about his experience. Turning White, A Memoir of Change, hits bookstores nationally in January of 07, and Lee Thomas joins us now. He's an entertainment reporter with the Fox News station in Detroit, and I know you're actually on the air in the morning, so Lee, thanks a lot for taking the time.
No, thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it, Allison and Bill.
So what were the first signs that you had this disease? When did you first realize something wasn't quite right?
I was sitting in the barber chair and getting a haircut, getting a DC fade, you know, on the side, I got the mirror, how he gives you the mirror, and I saw a spot on the back, and I thought he messed up my haircut, and I was ready to get mad. And so was he, because you know how barbers are about their work.
Of course.
We had a little discussion, and I got real close with the mirror, and you could see that there was a patch missing, and it was just the pigment in my skin was gone. So I called my mom, like everybody does when something's wrong, and she said it was a stress mark and that it was going to go away. And it actually did start to fade, but then two others came on the other side of my scalp. And then one started to form on my hand, and it just progressed from there. And then I went to the doctor and got diagnosed with vitiligo.
So at this point, what percentage of your body is covered at this point or has become susceptible to the lack of pigment?
Right now, it's probably about 35%. A lot of my face and scalp, my hands are completely gone. My feet are almost completely gone. Your extremities, it really attacks vigorously. So feet, hands, and other unmentionables. I mean, it's pretty much everywhere.
Don't mention the unmentionables.
I know, man. I
appreciate that. What is the pace of the disease? That is, how do you see its progress daily, or is it something that goes very slowly? Can you describe to us the process by which you see your pigment dying?
Yeah, you know, it's one of those random diseases. They say it attacks people between 25 and 45 mostly, but people as young as 3. But for me, the last 4 years, rapid. It's been crazy. My face was probably half of what you see on the cover of the book just 2 years ago, where I could cover it up easily. But now it's like 35% of my face, and in the last 4 years, it just progressed rapidly. Like my hands, just like a year ago, I still had, you know, pigment on my hands, but now my hands are completely white or void of color. So, and the doctors say that sometimes it'll progress rapidly, sometimes it'll stop and stay at bay. I know a gentleman who is 62, and he's had it the same way ever since he was a teenager. It hasn't progressed at all. So for me, the last few years have been a very rapid depigmentation.
Well, the upside of this, it's not fatal, it's not dangerous, but considering your career choice, you just must have had a host of thoughts running through your head as this disease began to progress. What did you consider doing about your career?
You know what? I thought it was over, to be honest with you. I remember back in the day, we both ran into each other in New York, and it was just starting to take its effect. I had a few bits around my nose and mouth, and that's when I started to freak out.
I remember you now.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Yeah, so back then, and I remember meeting you as well. Big fan of all your work. Oh, sorry, a fan moment. But yeah,
I'd like to thank you for that.
I really freaked out when I was in New York, and that's honestly part of the reason why I left. I said, you know, is it career or is it health? Because I thought it was going to be something more. I just something inside of me told me that vitiligo was the beginning of something that was wrong with me, because I was starting to get chronic fatigue, and as I got the chronic fatigue, it got worse. So I decided to, you know, take my health in my own hands and try and, you know, get a handle on it, and also try and find a job that was a bit less stressful and all kinds of things I was trying, whatever, to not let it take over my face. I completely freaked. I remember when I got the word, the guy said vitiligo and there's no cure. I remember like the room spinning and not hearing anything else because I thought, you know, I worked my way through college and paid for everything myself, and I'm sitting right in the middle of, you know, Big Apple in a great job, and the guy's telling me that I'm turning white, and it's I was freaking. But, you know, over the years, my attitude about life and everything has really, really changed. And not to sound too sappy, this disease has honestly made me the man I always wanted to be, you know, compassionate and honest. And all those things I always struggled to get, I feel like I am right now.
It's interesting. You're a storyteller by trade, and you have a great way of describing sort of the progression of it, the Michael Jackson way, that it all starts with one glove.
That's the truth. And, you know, I was a doubter of Michael Jackson before this happened to me, but I understand the one glove. I mean, how are you going to cover that up when you have big white patches on your hands and on your face, for that matter? Could you imagine being the most famous person on the planet? Everybody thinks you look like the cover of Thriller, and yet you look like the cover of my book, which is a blotchy face of white and black. And you have to reveal that to millions of people? I mean, I scared a little girl once, and it was really traumatic for me because she really screamed. She was about 3. And I stayed in the house for 2 weeks.
Wow.
Because of that. I couldn't imagine him going outside and dealing with all of the nasty things that people have to say, being the most famous person on the planet. So I understand how Michael Jackson became reclusive, but that's all I can speak for when it comes to him.
So why did you decide to go public with your story?
It was simple. I was on the phone, and you know how kids will call you, and they want to visit you at the station. Well, people who have vitiligo noticed my hands early on, and they called, and they would ask to bring their kids to the station. And I was talking to a teenager on the phone, and he said to me, "Would you tell your story on TV so people will treat me differently?" And he talked about an 8-year-old who wears a mask, one of those stocking masks, to go outside and play because he was tired of getting teased by other kids. And he says, if you tell your story and you educate people, maybe they'll understand and they'll treat me differently. And you know how you're caught up in your own struggle and you never really look up from it? That's why I wasn't telling my story on TV, but as soon as the young man asked me, it was really simple. You know, we're journalists, and we're here to help humanity, hopefully, by shining light on different subjects. And for me to shine light on myself was easy. We tell stories. So it was an easy answer. I said yes. My boss had been asking me for a year to tell the story, and I thought she just wanted ratings and exploitation. You know how that goes.
Sure. She did.
It is TV.
He is a TV executive. He knows.
It does help with the food and shelter thing for me right now. I'm not mad at anybody. But when the kid did ask me, it was easy. I said, yes, I will. I'm going to go in and talk to my boss and ask when she wants to air it. And I came back, and I called the kid back, and I said, it's going to air, you know, on this date, so look out for it.
And I misspoke at the top of this segment. Your book is coming out in January 2007. I'm like the person who can't – I mean 2008. I'm like the person who keeps writing 07 on the checks, right?
Right, right. The book is in bookstores now, but in January, because of all the attention, it actually goes national, which is incredible. I mean, you can get it online at like Amazon.com and stuff like that, but it'll be in all Barnes & Nobles in January. And I am overwhelmed because from the initial, I always wanted this to be about people, and so part of my proceeds from the book go to the Turning White Foundation, which is what I started, from the response of what I got from people, and also to the National Vitiligo Foundation. So it's one of those things where you can actually go past the screen and help people. So I'm overwhelmed. I mean, I'm honored just you guys to talk to me.
Appreciate it. We're going to link through to all your different websites on our website. Lee Thomas, thanks so much for sharing your story so candidly. I really appreciate it, and it's nice to talk to you again.
It's nice to talk to you, Allison and Bill. Pleasure to meet you.
Merry Christmas.
Have a good one.
NPR's Jamie Terabay has ended her tenure in Iraq. She's back in New York, and she'll talk to us next.